As published in Nexus magazine, that was back in December of 2002, it is now acknowledged by the Russian news agency Pravda that while the explosion at Chernobyl on April 26, 1986, was very large, it was luckily only a thermal blast. The fourth power generating unit was basically destroyed by overheated steam. There were deaths, and they continued to die. But there was no nuclear explosion. Roughly 180 tons of enriched uranium was in the reactor. Had a large blast happened, half of Europe would not currently be depicted on any maps. Now, there are many theories to explain the luck. One of the theories is that there was help from a UFO. And in a moment, we're going live to England to talk with Richard Lawrence about this case, how UFOs have assisted in revelations, and other incredible stories on Coast to Coast AM. Richard Lawrence has accumulated knowledge and experience in all things mind, body, spirit, including the area of UFOs. Now, Richard was Lord Kimberley's speechwriter during the House of Lords UFO debate in 1979 and was the first to bring declassified CIA and Pentagon UFO files to Britain in 1980. He launched a successful campaign in the United States for the release of UFO data from the FAA in 1987 and was also the first to reveal Soviet Union UFO papers in Britain in 1990. Richard became the paranormal expert on London News Radio and co-authored Contacts with the Gods from Space with George King in 1996. He has conducted lecture tours all over the world and has been a keynote speaker at the International Festivals for Mind, Body, and Spirit in London for more than 20 years. Richard is currently the secretary of the Aetherius Society in Europe. He's back on Coast to Coast after, Richard, 3 years. Where in the heck have you been?
George, I've really missed talking to you. Good evening. How are you?
Good to have you back, my friend.
Thank you.
I'm doing well. How are things in your neck of the woods?
Absolutely marvelous, actually. It's amazing how the consciousness has changed when you were reeling off some of the things that have happened over the years. It's such a change in open-mindedness, and especially, I think, regarding governments. I don't think people any longer, you know, believe what we're told by governments, whereas In the things you were referring to in the 80s and so forth, if you talked about government cover-ups of UFOs, people thought you were a bit of a conspiracy nutter.
Not anymore, Richard.
Not anymore. Everybody knows now, and I don't know whether you've probably covered the fact the French have just released thousands of UFO data that they've had for decades, really.
Have you had time to analyze any of that?
Yeah, it's very hard to get hold of because the internet went down and crashed. There were so many people trying to get it. But I have discovered that I think only 9% of them have an explanation other than UFOs. And I do believe there are hundreds of them that really can't be explained. Very well-documented, well-sourced cases from France which can't be explained away at all. There's no other explanation for them whatsoever. And, of course, you only need one, don't you? And you've proved the whole thing.
Absolutely. You know, that's what I tell our researcher and investigative reporter, Linda Moulton Howe, when she investigates crop circle formations.
Right.
She's convinced that so many of them are very real, and I try to keep reminding her. I say, Linda, all we need is one.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, really, we have fantastic documentation. And I think the other thing I've noticed is that people want to go deeper. They want to go beyond the phenomenon and say, look, what's the plan? Now, this is not new. It's been with us for thousands of years. Reports often connected with spiritual events. What is going on here? And when will they land? Who are they? What's their game plan?
Richard, you've been interested, fascinated with UFOs for many, many years. But you got to tell me, was there one episode that sparked your interest, that got you into the field you're in now? What happened to you?
Well, I was very, very lucky because I met a man called Dr. George King, who, as you mentioned, I co-authored the book, Contacts with the Gods from Space, with. It was far more his book than mine. I was just lucky to be there and write it with him. And he was a genuine UFO contactee, but also he was a great master of yoga in his own right, a great spiritual teacher. And very, very early on, when I first discovered his teachings in a place called Hull in England, where I was at university, A friend of mine and I had a most amazing UFO sighting, but it was a bit of a formative experience for me because I'd just come across the Aetherius Society and Dr. George King, and I was very keen on sport. I was very keen on playing a game called squash, which is like a racket game indoors, and I couldn't afford to buy any gym shoes, and I had a choice, as many students do. Do I buy books? Do I buy shoes? And in this case, I wanted to buy these books by Dr. King about the cosmic teachings and some of his tapes. And I made the choice to buy these books and tapes and not the gym shoes. And it was just days after that that there was a massive UFO sighting in Hull, seen by hundreds of people. It was a cigar-shaped object. And a friend of mine and I had a battered old car, and we went out and chased after this UFO, came to a field in the country at night, walked across the field, which was laden with dew, with rain, if you like. It was wet. And we saw the UFO moving very slowly in the sky. And as we watched it, it became obscured by a large oak tree in this field. And I looked down, and under the oak tree was a brand new pair of gym shoes. And it was my size and everything. And then we looked up again, and then the UFO came into view. Now, it's, you know, people can say it was a coincidence, it was a small thing. Obviously, I'm not saying the gym shoes were left by the UFO, but I'm a great believer in synchronicity. It was a little sign to me personally, because I knew that just days before this, I had made that choice to look into cosmic teachings revealed by Dr. George King, and I suppose that was a formative experience, a little sign, if you like, a bit of encouragement. And then from there, I looked into it, and it was absolutely just wonderful.
And you know, Richard, once it gets into your blood, the investigating part of all of this, you can't stop. I've been the same way in my broadcast career. You become obsessed with it.
Yes. I actually think it's not a bad thing to get obsessed, as long as it's under control, because, you know, it's the only way any great thing has ever been achieved in history, by people who've been obsessed with getting to the answers about things. And I mean, the good news, as far as I was concerned, is that there were answers. Because as a teenager, the thing that frustrated me was that I couldn't get any answers, and nobody seemed to care about finding them. But, you know, through programs like yours, mm-hmm. and through the Aetherius Society, of course, and other organizations, I mean, answers are available to people, which is a wonderful thing.
Let's talk a little bit more about Dr. George King, because his name is going to come up time and time again tonight. What got him psychically gifted?
Well, he was actually psychically gifted as a child and had quite amazing healing experiences, even as a 10-year-old. He was an extremely unusual person who really from childhood had extraordinary abilities. And not only psychic abilities, he was extraordinary in his interest in everything that came his way. Extremely diligent, hard-working individual, but very grounded at the same time, which is an unusual combination, as I'm sure you'd agree, George, to find people who are highly psychic, but also extremely practical. And he had those two qualities combined in one person. He turned, and we're now talking, he was born in 1919, and of course it wasn't long before the Second World War broke out. He was only 20, and he was a section leader in the fire service here during the Blitz, a very dangerous time, of course, in London. But he turned to yoga then, I mean, years before it was fashionable or really known about too much. There were great pioneers bringing it out of India, like Swami Vivekananda and others, but it was an unusual thing for a young man to do. But you used the word obsessive. He didn't just turn to it. He went for it 8 hours a day for 10 years on top of a job. And so he was a very – I haven't actually come across anyone who's even claimed to have been that diligent, certainly in the West anyway, about yoga practice. And so, of course, he got results. And that's the reason. People often say, well, why George King? Why was he chosen? Well, he's never said he was the only person who was chosen, but he was certainly a unique person with a unique role. And that's why, because he had this extraordinary quality, and he dedicated himself completely to spiritual practice, heightened his consciousness above what you might call the normal psychic level, and was therefore usable by cosmic beings. They could contact him. He could reach the level of consciousness that was required by them.
Now, this contact, were other people witnesses to many of the things that had happened to him?
What he used to do when he started the Aetherius Society in England in the 1950s was go to a very well-known hall in London called the Caxton Hall, a place called Westminster, not far from Parliament over here, and he used to, in public, go into a deep state of trance, which is not the sort of typical trance used by mediums. A much more elevated trance, if those who are familiar with yoga will have come across samadhi, and it was a samadhic trance involving using a thing called the kundalini and other forces, which we can talk about if you're interested,
sure,
or if people are interested. But in that state of trance, he would bring through communicators. One of them was called Aetherius, hence the Aetherius Society, the Master Aetherius. There would be communicators from Mars, and these would be heard by hundreds of people live. Now, some of those were extremely provable because, for example, he would get forecasts of UFO activity. So he would, or these communicators would say, in September the 11th or something like this, 1956, there will be UFO activity over part of Peru or a part of Sydney, Australia, or whatever it might be. So it could be verified. Independent witnesses would see these UFOs. They wouldn't have even known that they'd been predicted. And he got a lot of verification that way in the early days. The other thing he used to get a lot of information about was the dangers of nuclear experimentation. And, of course, we all know now, I don't think anyone would dispute it now, but it was very disputed in the 1950s. Some of the information he got was absolutely provably correct. Some of the facts he got about the dangers in causing leukemia and causing cancer and so forth, but also specific locations. I mean, for example, he pinpointed a Russian atomic accident in 1958 that wasn't revealed till 18 years later by the Soviet Union.
Was he ever told of any past nuclear wars or dangers that might have been on this planet thousands, if not millions, of years ago, Richard?
Absolutely he was. Yes, he very much so. He was told that there were two great civilizations on this planet before the one we're in now. And these are known about, in, for example, in Theosophy and some other writings. The first one is often called Lemuria. Some people call it Mu.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, of course, very well known, was Atlantis. And he was talking millions of years here, whereas some people will try to put Atlantis at sort of 13,000 years ago. That's another civilization. That's not the Atlantis that he was referring to. What he did, though, which was different from, I believe, any teachings that had gone before him, as far as I know, was that he said that these were destroyed by atomic war. And, in fact, if you look at some of the old Hindu scripts, the Ramayana, some of the accounts, or even something like Sodom and Gomorrah, you can see that these could have been, and I believe were, accounts of nuclear fallout in earlier civilizations. And people often point to things like the flood that Noah is associated with and so forth as being an effect of this. And, of course, the great message that the cosmic masters, as we call them, were bringing through Dr. George King was to say, don't do this again, don't let it happen again, because it could happen again. And especially when they first started to communicate in 1954 onwards was a very dangerous time, because people didn't appreciate the terrible dangers of nuclear experimentation.
This is incredible information, Richard, because it corroborates things that we have long suspected that might have occurred on this planet a long time ago. We've had guests on who have believed in ancient civilizations. We've had guests on who have talked about finding under the sands of the desert glass that could only occur during some kind of nuclear explosion or asteroid. smashing into the planet. The fact that he was told that there were major episodes millions of years ago is, to me, it's just unbelievable.
It what's incredible, I find, about Dr. King is that he was, and still even now is, but very much then, was so ahead of his time and was saying things that, you know, are pretty broadly accepted now. As you say, there's been these incredible findings, hasn't there, of gold chains which have been carbon dated at a million years or more ago, and they were, you know, beautifully crafted. Obviously, there were previous civilizations here, and they've been found all over the world. It's a fascinating subject, I must agree. But he was saying all this then, and of course, it was highly controversial. He was ridiculed mercilessly in the 1950s.
I was going to say, Richard, did they think he was a quack during this time period?
Well, he was accused of many things, and you know, again, the climate has changed, because I remember doing a lot of radio phone-ins in the UK in the 80s, and you'd always get people phoning in saying, you know, are you a fake, are you, and accusing you of this, that, or the other, or being nutty, or whatever, and you just don't get it now. As a matter of fact, the skeptic community get it far more than the believers, I think, now. But go back to the 1950s, and Britain being a very conservative country, especially then, and a man comes out and says, I have been contacted by Mars, beings from Venus, and I can prove it, and bringing great spiritual teachings and wonderful teachings, never mind the scientific information, he had to have tremendous strength. But my experience of knowing him for over 25 years is that he never, ever deviated from the truth. He just wasn't willing to do that.
That is fantastic. When he would get these extraterrestrial contacts, did they ever tell him where they are from? Was it another universe, or was it from a star system somewhere in this universe?
Yes, you know, that again is very interesting, because he was talking then about higher frequencies of civilization in this solar system. So most of the communications he got, not all, but most of them, came from beings in this solar system. And, of course, people just laugh you out of town if you talked about life on Mars or Venus or Jupiter at one time. But he always stuck to this idea of higher matter, if you like, concepts which are now quite familiar to us, like invisible matter and higher dimensional life. He was really talking about then, in the 1950s. I mean, I did an interview over here not very long ago with a man, I don't know if you've interviewed him, George, he's the Astronomer Royal here, Sir Martin Rees, a real establishment figure who's, you know, a scientific man and astronomer. And he said to me not so long ago that he thinks we need to look at the possibility of life on planets that can't sustain life as we know it, like Mars and Venus and Jupiter and Saturn. And this is a tremendous advance. But Dr. King was saying this openly in public audiences, in the media, in the 1950s, and has been, again, vindicated, I believe.
There was another individual in this country by the name of George Adamski.
Oh, yes.
Who reminds me a little bit of Dr. George King in that he, too, would talk about his involvement with, you know, beings, with Venus. And he too, was ridiculed, Richard.
Yes, he was. He was. And, in fact, his early contacts, Dr. King absolutely believed in and were verified through him. The very early contacts that George Adamski had. And again, you know, he paved the way, I think, for some other UFO contactees.
Well, George King was born in 1919, so I take it he's not with us anymore?
No, he passed on in 1997. And, you know, right up to the end, and he wasn't in the best of health at the end, he was still receiving contacts from beings from other worlds.
All right, let's talk more about that when we come back. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Richard Lawrence, our special guest tonight, as we talk about some incredible UFO cases and also the life of Dr. George King and his unique contacts. Did these contacts, Richard, come to him quickly? How did he summon them at any specific time?
Really, they, on the whole, they chose the time, not him. But they could give him very, very short notice. They could give him, you know, just a matter of a couple of minutes, on certain occasions, or even shorter than that in a real emergency. But they would pick the time. For example, just to give one example, in 1958 he was in Devon when he received details of a Russian atomic accident, which turned out to be in the Ural Mountains. He published this in 1958. So it was given to him at the time of the event. It was, as I mentioned earlier, it was 18 years later before anyone in the world had news from any other source about this. So it verified the contact. But basically, he had to be on call 24 hours a day, George.
Did he ever physically see the extraterrestrials, Richard?
Yes, he had encounters where he did. He also, being a master of yoga himself, he could practice astral projection, out-of-body projection,
right,
if you like. And then he could come into contact with beings from other worlds and see them. The physical aspect is a fascinating one, because obviously cosmic beings have a control over matter that we don't have yet in our world. And this is why so many people seem to report that UFOs blink out or blink back into existence. They're able to travel through different frequencies. And Dr. King himself was very much aware of this and had experiences both in his physical body and out of it.
Did he describe what they looked like, Richard?
Yes, he described them as being tall humanoid beings. I mean, that isn't to say that there isn't life out there in the universe which is not humanoid. He said that very much that there is. But the sort of contacts that he experienced and that most people through history in this earth have experienced have been with humanoid beings, great beings, taller, perhaps 7 foot tall, cinnamon-colored skin, long hair. And he also mentioned this single-piece suit that is so often described in alien contacts.
And you know, even though he believed that they were coming from this solar system, what are the possibilities, Richard, that maybe they were in a huge mothership in our solar system? So technically he was correct.
Oh, very much so. I mean, he believed definitely in life on other planets in this solar system. But clearly, you and I couldn't live on Jupiter or Saturn. I mean, he always said it's on a higher frequency, which might not even be detectable or visible to us. Just in the same way, of course, that there are people who've died on this world that are clairvoyant, and you know, I've had this experience, and millions of others have. You can see if you're in a certain state of heightened consciousness, but they're not in a physical body. They're living now on a higher frequency. Well, that principle applies even on so-called uninhabitable planets. But there is a particular spacecraft that comes into orbit, because the thing that the cosmic beings are interested in doing is in helping us to help ourselves. Every time we take a step towards them, they can take two towards us. But they won't interfere and alter our history and solve all our problems, because that would rob us of the most valuable ability that we have, the most valuable gift that we have, if you like, which is experience itself. So one example of this is a spacecraft known as Satellite Number 3, which comes into orbit periodically. Now, on that spacecraft, there are beings, in a long-winded way, I'm afraid, I am answering your question, who don't all come from this solar system. And they work together, they cooperate together. I mean, we are the only planet in this solar system that doesn't cooperate at an interplanetary level.
And you said right up to his death, they were communicating with him.
Absolutely, they were. You see, this craft, Satellite Number 3, potentizes our spiritual actions. It doesn't, as I say, solve all our problems for us. But if a person is praying, is meditating, is serving others in one way or another, physically, mentally, or spiritually, while this craft is in orbit, in what we call a spiritual push, then it will potentize that action 3,000 times. So it's enhancing our activities. And this kind of activity, Dr. King was aware of. He was receiving communications about cosmic activity up to a week before he died, yes.
Now let's talk about the contact prior to the nuclear accident at Chernobyl, which has been 21 years from almost today.
Yes, exactly. Yes, because they say April the 26th, but American time, it was April the 25th, of course. And this was an absolute incredible experience for me, because I happened to be with Dr. King in a room in a hotel in Arizona when he received just a little under 5 hours before the Chernobyl disaster, a communication from a being from Mars warning of a dire catastrophe. Now, unlike the 1958 example, which I mentioned, the purpose of this communication wasn't to give information so much as to start a program of action to lessen the impact of this disaster. So the details about Chernobyl were not given. He was simply told a terrible calamity, a terrible disaster is due to happen. It's necessary to activate a program of spiritual energy release, which means sending energy through apparatus into our world to lessen the effect of this particular disaster. And this program commenced just before the Chernobyl disaster and for several days after it.
Were they asking him to do this, to channel this energy? Okay.
Yes, they virtually gave instructions, which he accepted, that he always accepted, and they said, you must start this program of spiritual energy release, and they gave him the times, and they were cooperating directly with it, as they still do, by the way. This type of activity still continues around the world to this day. The Aetherius Society is engaged now in cooperating with them, not just talking about them. But this particular program was very specific, because if we take one step towards them, they can take two towards us. So if we are willing to cooperate with them, they can then do more to intervene to help us with our problems. And it turned out years later that hundreds of people actually witnessed a UFO hovering over the fourth power station, the one that had the accident at Chernobyl, that they saw a crimson light emitted from this UFO into that particular power station. And according to Pravda, as you mentioned at the head of the program, as a result of this, it was a steam explosion, not a nuclear one. Had it been a nuclear one, it would have wiped out half of Europe, according to Pravda.
A disaster of biblical proportions.
Absolutely. And we published the details of this release that we did in cooperation with UFOs in 1986, the year it happened. Pravda came out in 2002, so it was just another verification, really, of this kind of cooperation.
Well, when Dr. King got this information hours before the Chernobyl episode, and again, he didn't know exactly where it was.
Not on this occasion, no.
What did he do, or what did he say, or what did he kick into motion?
Well, in this particular example, he was receiving it not in the way I described earlier, where they were communicating through him, through his voice. He was writing it down. He received it telepathically. I was there providing the paper and the pens, and just in case he needed anything. He wrote it down, and it was a program of activity of energy release that we had to put out. So he basically, when it was over, got on the phone very quickly to our headquarters in Los Angeles and started this program into action, in a very dynamic manner, and continued really for several days. We stayed there, and I think it was about the 29th of April that the world actually heard that something had happened. And of course, it was the full effects of it were covered up for years, and some would say they're still being covered up today.
Now, you talked about using some kind of apparatus to assist. Now, tell me about this.
We have equipment, and we perform various missions in cooperation with these cosmic beings, and these missions are designed to help humanity. They're certainly not profit-making in any sense at all. Quite the contrary, they're purely designed to help the world. And some of them are designed to help the planet the Mother Earth. I mean, another thing where Dr. King was very much ahead of his time is that he was into ecology from the beginning, in the 1950s. And not just in the way that most people talk about ecology nowadays, which is we must keep this planet for ourselves and our future generations, but also, even more so actually, for the Mother Earth herself as a living being. And so some of our missions are designed to help bring that kind of stability to the planet. Some are designed to bring world healing to areas, to regions, where there is war, where there is poverty, and where there is starvation and disease and so on. And a part of those missions involves equipment. And we have a piece of equipment in certain parts of the world known as a spiritual energy radiator. And this, it uses the principles, George, of radionics. In other words, using physical devices which can channel psychic or spiritual energy. And then we never release, actually, the exact nature of the equipment because such information could be misused. But we give the principles behind it. And also, he devised later, actually, a piece of equipment called a battery. And this is a something which stores spiritual energy. And we have some of these batteries, again, in various parts of the world. In America, we have a very active branch in Michigan, actually, a wonderful branch there, as well as our headquarters in Los Angeles. In New Zealand, we have equipment there, and, of course, in various parts of the UK. And these batteries can store spiritual energy, but you still need the human agency of prayer, of mantra, of healing to put the energy into that battery. But then, of course, when it comes to any kind of disaster, it can be released very quickly indeed because you've got it stored. You don't have to get hundreds of people together in a matter of minutes to send the energy out. You've got it. And we do all this in cooperation with beings from other planets.
I live in Los Angeles quite a bit. Can I get a tour and maybe see this? Would you arrange that
for
me? We
don't, as I say, we are very careful about releasing, the details. But certainly you'd be made very, very welcome at our American headquarters, as indeed with other listeners. I mean, people who want to get in touch with us, we have a free phone there, which is 1-800-800-1354. Or people can go to our website. But the actual apparatus itself, because, I think you've probably covered on your show many times the misuse of radionic apparatus.
Yes.
In warfare and so on. It's nothing personal about this. We just don't reveal those details. Dr. King was very hot on that way back even in the 1960s, before the full release of, Soviet and behind the Iron Curtain and so on, research into this type of thing for warfare. We just don't want it to be misused. It's always used for world peace, freedom, and healing.
Has it changed technically over the years as technology has gotten better?
The basic concepts and principles haven't because they're based on radionics. But obviously where we can, where it's appropriate, we have to adapt and will adapt to technology. But the basic principles are really based on the idea of it being used by beings from other planets. They're the ones that manipulate all the energy and send it where it's most required. It's an example, really, another example of direct cooperation. I think that's the hopeful message for all of us, that we can all cooperate with beings from other planets to help bring world peace and enlightenment.
Why the intervention, Richard? Why do you think they wanted to stop the Chernobyl disaster?
Well, they are extremely compassionate. I mean, it's a very good question, really, actually, as to why should these great advanced beings, and in the Aetherius Society, and I admit this is controversial, but we believe some of the great spiritual figures of our history, like Jesus, Buddha, Sri Krishna, and others, have come, Moses and Lao Tse and so on, have come from other worlds. And it's a question, why would they do it? Why would they suffer? Why are they watching over us and bothering with us? Well, one reason, of course, is that when we start to deal with nuclear experimentation, we aren't even just threatening the human race, which is criminal enough, we're also threatening the planet. And that's something they are not going to permit, the destruction of this wonderful planet. So they are very, very concerned about that. But they're also extremely compassionate beings in a way that is foreign to the human race, really. And they, although we're alien to them, they really want to help us. It's as simple as that.
Would an atomic mishap also affect some kind of tear in space-time in the universe? Would it do something that could affect them as well?
Yes, it would, of course, if there was a severe explosion. They could, though, contain that. I mean, they have the apparatus. That's why some of these scare stories, I think, are so inappropriate, because, you know, for example, people feeling that, you know, we should protect ourselves from invasion, from hostile aliens and so on. We wouldn't have a chance if they wanted to do that. If there weren't benign, protective beings overlooking us, we could have been invaded a long time ago by hostile forces, and we wouldn't stand a chance because their technology is so well ahead. So, yes, there would be turbulence, but they have the equipment, the science, to deal with that. I mean, their main concern is very, very much for us.
Richard, did they ever tell Dr. King about the alien abduction phenomena?
I'm not aware of communications much on that field. Dr. King I found to be extremely open-minded. He never said, I know, I'm the only one or anything like that at all. I mean, certainly I would say he was completely unique in history. That would be my take on it and the Aetherius Society's take on it. But he wasn't the only one. So there were... it's quite possible. I think one would have to look at the abduction cases on an individual level. But he did say, though, that we're very much protected and there wouldn't be a sort of whole-scale abduction strategy going on where people were taken away for ghastly operations on UFOs. On a regular basis, that wouldn't be permitted. We would be protected from that kind of thing.
See, I've always thought that... there was a group of extraterrestrials out there that weren't as benevolent as, let's say, the ones that have contacted Dr. King,
yes,
or that we may be aware of.
Oh, definitely. No, he absolutely said that. I mean, and there are alien beings who are extremely hostile, and even from his earliest communications, he talked about attempts to come here and so on and invade us. But there was always that element of protection. We couldn't possibly protect ourselves. I mean, there are many people who, you can't protect yourself from an enemy you don't even believe in. And so many people didn't then anyway believe in such things, or those that did lied about it in government and so forth. So we would have been absolutely helpless without this kind of protection, but absolutely agree with you. And he said many times, there are hostile aliens out there. Absolutely. Yes, there are.
How about a website, Richard, for people to go and peruse what you do?
If people go to Aetherius, that's AETHERIUS.org, there's lots of things up there and lots of offers up there, and we'll welcome them. Anyone who wants to communicate with me through my website is welcome to do so if I can answer any of their questions. RichardLawrence.co.uk.
All right, and they're all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back with more with Richard Lawrence. For example, is it possible for you to contact this alien intelligence? And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Richard Lawrence, our special guest tonight. Richard, was it just primarily nuclear problems and catastrophes that the ETs contacted Dr. George King with?
No, it wasn't just that at all. They were talking about a major change. They were talking about a cosmic plan and a major change that's coming about in the near future. And, of course, this aligns with some of the other prophecies of the time we're living in, and that the Earth is going into what one could call a new age, although that term has been abused by some people. But, nevertheless, a new age will dawn, is starting to dawn in our world. And they were preparing humanity for this great change. It's a change which is coming about to the planet herself, the Mother Earth, as I mentioned earlier, as a living being. And there are things that we can all do to prepare ourselves. I mean, they never talked about a one and only way or there's just one path to enlightenment. There are various paths, but the big message that they gave, the overriding priority now, is service to others, as opposed to just personal development. And these are some of the messages they gave. For example, there's a wonderful, wonderful practice that I love myself very much indeed, called the 12 Blessings. Now, this was delivered, and this is a bit controversial, but nevertheless, it was delivered by the Master Jesus through Dr. King in 1958. And it's not so much a teaching, although it is that, but it's even more a practice. It's something people can do to make a difference to the world, and it will also, and does, really change the life of the person who does it as well for the good. So it's a combined effort, if you like, of spiritual service to others to save the planet, prepare for this new age, and also it brings about your own enlightenment and great peace within.
Are they almost like updated commandments?
That's a very interesting question, actually. They're not really updated commandments so much as, if you could say, they're closer to a continuation of the Sermon on the Mount. They're blessings to various focal points. For example, the first one is, blessed are they who work for peace. That's all people in the world, no matter in what way they're doing it, whether they're trying to negotiate peace in the Middle East or whether they're working in the Darfur region to bring peace, whatever their religion or no religion, if they're working for peace, they form a group soul, so the first blessing goes out to that group soul and empowers them in their work for peace. And then it goes through 11 other focal points, the wise ones, they who serve, blessed are they who love, I mean, and so forth. And then it becomes more cosmic as it goes to the planet herself, the Mother Earth, the Sun, and then even out beyond that into the great beings throughout the universe. And, of course, the other principle behind this is the age-old principle of karma, that what goes around comes around. So as you send energy out, so you receive it back, and this empowers your life as well.
Are other people to date receiving contacts from these same ETs?
There have been individuals on this planet. I mean, I imagine you must have covered the Ascended Masters, have you, George, from time to time?
Yes, we've done that.
Right. And so there are beings like that, mostly ones who work behind the scenes, who do have contacts and communication with these intelligences. But Dr. King's particular role, at this time in our history anyway, was to be public with it. And it was very, very difficult, as we discussed earlier, especially when he started in the 50s, to get anybody to report it at all accurately. And actually, I did want to take this opportunity to really compliment you, George. I mean, it's so rare to have an opportunity like this to put over concepts in an unadulterated manner through the media. And I think you're doing fantastic things with your program. It's really wonderful. But so often, you don't get it out in a proper manner, or you get bogged down in lengthy scientific debate and never get past the first point. But with Dr. King, his role was really to spread their teaching. So I'd have to say that he had a unique role with these beings.
Well, you know, and like Dr. King, we had Art Bell, who started this concept for us many years ago.
Exactly.
Richard, I merely have taken the torch, and I'm trying to run up the hill with it.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job. I mean, you're known. I bumped into somebody the other day. I'm appearing on another station in London, actually, called Smooth Radio, starting next month, as their paranormal expert.
Excellent.
I was talking to one of the controllers there, and he downloads your show every day in London, gets it on his mobile, listens to it in the train or in the car. You know, you've got a massive fan base, as I'm sure you know, the world over.
Well, people want answers, and they want the truth, and they want to find out what's going on. And though some of this could be entertainment and some of the kinds of shows we've done, by and large, people want to think. And there are millions of people now all around this planet who are just trying to get a better understanding, Richard, why they're here, where they're headed, and what's going on this planet.
Exactly. I mean, that's what we found in the Aetherius Society. I've been very lucky because I've been able to travel around the world, as you mentioned earlier, for the Aetherius Society, and met members and sympathizers in New Zealand, in Australia, in Africa, you know, throughout America as well as Europe. And I've found that the sort of people who are searching for truth, it's not necessarily about intellectual background. It's certainly not about racial background or social background. It's this burning desire to get to the truth, no matter what it is. And they're people who can't, and I'm sure this applies to people, you know, that you listen to your program. They're people who can't just dismiss something because it sounds unlikely. Because so many things that sounded unlikely have been fantastically true. And when you really think about it, they are likely. I mean, we've been celebrating over here, you know, the abolition of the slave trade a couple of hundred years ago.
Sure.
And what's extraordinary is that at that time, for someone to go out and say, well, slavery is wrong, was regarded as outrageous and regarded as eccentric, and nobody could understand why they would want to do it. And now, anyone who was in favor of slavery would be regarded as abominable. And I think it's going to be even more so with the sort of things you and I are talking about. I mean, we've already seen a shift in the last 25, 30 years. In a few decades, everybody's going to believe in inhabited life. Well, a planet was discovered yesterday. I don't know whether you covered that.
Oh, yeah, we sure did.
Okay.
We blanketed that one.
All right. Well, I won't bore your listeners again, but, I mean, that you know, at the time, people would say there's no inhabited planets out there at all, and now we've just discovered one. Just, you know, in astronomical terms, just down the road.
That has that possibility.
And, yeah.
You know, the quest to find life out there in the universe is something that has pushed mankind, I think, since our beginning. And
yeah.
The fact that it's coming here, it's been coming here, and that we may be who they are is fascinating all by itself, Richard.
Yes. And the other thing people tend to do, I think it's a big mistake, is to judge aliens by ourselves. So they'll say something like, I always get asked whenever I'm giving a lecture, you know, well, if they existed, why don't they land openly and prove themselves, you know, in the Hollywood Bowl or Hyde Park, London, or somewhere like that? And then people will go on even further and say, well, if they existed, they would land openly, they would prove themselves. And this is a big, big mistake, because we're dealing with an alien intelligence. It's not for us to say what we think they would do. We have to look at what they do. And that is that they've been visiting us for thousands of years. I mean, the Hindu scripts are full of Vimanas, and I'm sure you cover that type of thing. I find it fascinating. The ancient Greek legends, the Celtic legends, some of the Native American indigenous tribes in Africa, etc., have reported this activity for thousands of years. It's going on now as never before. They're being filmed on video regularly nowadays, and yet they haven't chosen to force humanity to believe in them. So what is the cosmic plan? What are they engaged in? And we have to not try and say, well, that's what I think they would do. We have to say, what are they doing? And that's where Dr. George King, for example, is so valuable, because he can then answer those questions and say, look, this is their message, this is why they're here, and this is what you personally, every individual in the world, can do to cooperate with them if they wish to.
What kind of person was he as an individual?
He was extremely down-to-earth. He had a fantastic sense of humor. He was the opposite to what you might call flaky. He really was grounded and believed in carrying out the task he was given. He was completely committed to it. The contact came in 1954, as we call it, the command, when he was first contacted by the master Aetherius, and he just stuck to it throughout the rest of his life for 24 hours a day. He was very, very hard working, very much led from the front. He wasn't a great lover of public appearances, although he did make many, but he didn't seek out the limelight of choice. He wrote many, many books, and I strongly recommend one, for example, I would recommend to listeners. If you just want to check us out, it's called The Nine Freedoms, a wonderful book of well, it's my favorite book in the world, actually, of great spiritual teaching. And he just stuck to his guns, really, come what may. He had that sort of spirit that you associate with a pioneer, someone who just knew. He, of course, knew that it was true. He knew that he was getting it. He was a trained yogi, and he just stuck to it, really.
What was his belief, Richard, about divine intervention? What was, you know, in the fact that there was a creator behind all of this?
Yes, he was a very, obviously, as one would expect, a very spiritual and indeed a religious man, and believed in God, but didn't wish to limit it to any one religion. There's this wonderful parable of Ramakrishna that the Hindu saint in the 19th century said, if you take 8 boys and blindfold them, they'd never seen an elephant, and you took them into a shed where an elephant was kept, and each one of those boys could touch one part of that elephant, the tail, the trunk, the leg, and then you bring them out again and you ask for their 8 descriptions, you'd get 8 completely different descriptions, but the elephant would be the same. And he said that is true of the different religions. They've touched on different aspects of God. God isn't changed by religion. God is above and beyond it all. And Dr. King had this concept of the absolute, of a divine creator throughout the whole cosmos, and tremendous respect. He was a great lover of the Eastern traditions. He was a practitioner of the advanced forms of yoga himself, as I mentioned earlier, for 10 years, but also tremendous respect for the Western religions too. So he's very broad-minded. But his mission was to bring a cosmic dimension to that. And where does it fit in the universe as a whole and with the coming new age? So he was extremely, extremely focused. And divine intervention, he said, was nearly at an end, hence the various missions that he introduced. And, for example, he went to 18 mountains around the world, which were then charged with energy by these beings from other planets. Now, anybody can go to them. There are 4 in America, and do whatever spiritual practice they wish to do on them, actually, and energy will go out. So this is a way, if you like, of people cooperating with that divine intervention. But it is down to us, he said. We've got to stand on our own 2 feet. We can't just expect to be saved. We have to make an effort ourselves.
Is Mount Shasta one of them?
It isn't one of the mountains that he was involved in charging, but it was a mountain which he had tremendous respect for. He regarded it as a holy place and went there himself.
Would you happen to have the 4 here in the United States?
Yes, I would. Yes, there are 2 in California. One is Mount Baldy, and the other is Mount Talak. And then there's Castle Peak in Colorado and Mount Adams in New Hampshire. And we arrange pilgrimages to all those mountains from time to time. I would advise people to get onto the website. Some of them need mountaineering advice. They're not all an easy climb by any means. In fact, none of them is an easy climb. We're lucky in the UK, in Britain, we have some mountains which are much easier to climb. But we're always happy to give advice. If people want to call our free phone number, it's 1-800-800-1354. And as I stress, you don't have to be of any particular religion. You may not regard yourself as being religious at all, but you can send out spiritual energy into the world.
Now, when you say that he charged these mountains, tell me more about that.
Would climb the mountains, and this is a mission which was called Operation Starlight, and it lasted between 1958 and 1961. And he would actually physically go to 18. Actually, there was a 19th mountain, Mount Kilimanjaro, that was charged by an ascended master, not by him personally. But he would go to them. He had to enter an elevated somatic state on them. And this is all part of the principle of every step we take towards them, they can take 2 towards us. They would then, the cosmic masters, and it would be a different master, depending which mountain it was, would put an initial charge through him into the mountain. And then, of course, it would be completely charged. And it can't be discharged by anyone. The energy is there. You can feel it. You can go there. And you can have a wonderful spiritual pilgrimage, if you like. The main purpose of it, though, I would stress, unlike some pilgrimages, is to serve the world. It's to go there to send energy out to the world, to bring healing, to bring peace. But it will also, as a secondary thing, be a wonderful spiritual experience which will change your life.
Did he ever describe these beings in terms of their craft? You know, I know originally it was a telepathic connection. He did see them. But was there ever a craft involved?
Yes, there was. There were, of course, particularly in the 50s when he was first starting out, George, there was the flying saucer. We don't hear much about that now. The disc-shaped craft. If you like, the George Adamski photograph, the early photograph, which has sort of made it famous. And he definitely talked about those existing, and he had experiences. And then there were the motherships, which you referred to, which are more the cigar-shaped object. And he himself went to a craft I mentioned earlier called Satellite Number 3, out of body, and he described in detail, actually, in the Nine Freedoms, as a wonderful description of the technology in that craft. As a matter of fact, we're doing some podcasts from our website at the moment about the Nine Freedoms, and I don't know whether they're going to cover this, but there's a very interesting description of that craft when he visited it, and it shows really the function. I mean, so many UFOs and let's say IFOs, identified flying objects, are really here to give some technological support to this planet of one kind or another in spiritual ways. And Satellite Number 3 is one of these, and it just beams down energy. But it can only do it when people on this world are engaged in service to others.
Richard, when we come back after the break, I want to ask you whether Dr. King was ever told the secrets of end times, Revelation.
Right.
And we'll get into that a little bit more. Next hour, we'll open up the phone line so you can chat with Richard Lawrence and give us your thoughts on ET contact. As a matter of fact, I would love it for those of you who believe that you are having some kind of telepathic ET contact to check in with us as well. The websites we've been talking about tonight, Richard Lawrence, LAWRENCE.co.uk. You can also go to the Aetherius.org website. Now, both of these websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com with Richard Lawrence. So make sure that you just go and peruse those and grab as much information as you can. I got to tell you, when I go back to Los Angeles, and I'll be back Monday, I'm going to definitely look up the Aetherius Society and go in and chat with them. And maybe if I'm lucky, maybe if I'm very, very lucky, I'll be able to see the radionic apparatus that Richard was talking about and take pictures of it. Nah, I don't think they'll let me. I'll be back. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie along with Richard Lawrence. Richard, end times prophecy, of course, is something I've always been fascinating in. The book of Revelation, of course, at the end of the Bible.
Yeah.
Did these ETs ever talk with Dr. George King about end times or, you know, what could happen?
Yes, well, they said right from the beginning that we're at a very, very dangerous time in our history now. And that these are, if you like, the last days of the old order. And this brings us back to the discussion earlier about the dangers of nuclear experimentation. And that we're going into a new age. So it's all a question of how we go about it. There could easily, it's not over yet, but there could have been dire catastrophe by now and great destruction, not of the whole planet, but of parts of the human race. And the Aetherius Society is been working, one organization anyway, that's been working in cooperation with beings from other planets to try and make this as smooth a transition as possible. Now, allied with this is what has been called in the Bible and elsewhere a sorting of souls. We're great believers, along with so many others, of course, in reincarnation. And the fact that although there are a certain number of people physically alive, there are billions of others who are on other levels waiting to reincarnate. And in this period, we are choosing, really, as individuals, each one of us, whether we are going to go forward into this new age, whether we're going to cooperate with this great spiritual change which is taking place, or whether we are not. And then there'll be this sorting will take place, and those that go forward, those that work and cooperate with the change in numerous different ways, will inherit this new age. Those that don't will continue their evolution on another planet. This is not a punishment, but it's because they will not be ready, if you like, whoever they are, to sustain the very high, elevated vibrations which are coming to and from the Mother Earth in the new age.
Why don't they dismantle all the nuclear weapons on this planet?
Very good question, and I'm sure they would dearly love to in one way, except it would do something I referred to earlier, which is rob us of the most valuable gift we have from the divine, if you like, and that is experience. It'd be the same question, really. Why doesn't a parent just do all their child's homework for them? All the answers would be correct. They'd get 100%, but they'd learn nothing. And we are here as individuals to learn through karma, through experience, through the cycle of reincarnation, to evolve. And so they will help us. They will help us to do that. They are helping us to do that. They're helping us to reduce the impact of radioactive release, such as in Chernobyl, which we're told could have led to millions of, it could have changed the shape of Europe. An earlier accident in Russia could have led to millions of deaths. So they will help, they'll cooperate, but they won't do it all for us. We have to do it. Otherwise, we've got nothing.
It could be a fatal mistake for us if they don't get involved.
Well, they are involved, but they can only go so far. This is the divine intervention we were talking about earlier. Intervention can go so far and no further. We will not be allowed, though, to destroy the whole planet. That will not happen. But they can't, or they won't, intervene so far that it defies karma, if you like. It defies the whole purpose of existence, which is to evolve and to learn and to gain experience.
It is fascinating that these UFO reports really started to heat up during the time we were experimenting with the nuclear weaponry.
Absolutely, and very often over the sites or over the plants. I mean,
yes.
There have been many sightings over Chernobyl and other atomic plants as well. And nuclear installations and military installations.
One of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes, Richard, was the one called To Serve Man. Do you remember that at all?
I didn't see that, no.
Okay, that was, it started on, I can talk about it now because, mm-hmm. You know, it's a number of years old. I'm not giving away any trade secrets. But it started with an individual who was in an alien spacecraft telling his story in a flashback, and he went on to explain that we had incredible problems on this planet, and there was a visitation from above by extraterrestrials, and they came and they said, we can help you do this and that and increase your crops and, you know, get you better energy, and they left behind a book while they were doing this, and it had a, you know, it was written in their tongue, so, you know, we were trying to decode it. And along the entire program, people, Earthlings, would take visitations and tours to this other planet. Mm. And, you know, so you would see scenes of them getting on the ship, and the ships would take off by the hundreds. And finally, the person who was in the flashback in the ship when it started, we saw him boarding the ship to go up it, and all of a sudden somebody came running out. They had decoded the book that was left behind, and the book title was To Serve Man. It was a cookbook. They were harvesting humans to eat. And it was a great Twilight Zone show. I'll never forget it. It's one of my favorites. Rod Serling, the creator, always had a message behind it. In this particular case, what message did they leave with Dr. George King for us?
Well, not trying to sort of pinch your story there, which is fascinating, a bit of science fiction there, but it is to serve man. I mean, that is the real message, that we can all make a massive difference. I mean, one of the things the Aetherius Society is very involved in is healing, giving of healing, teaching of people to give healing. And there are so many healers that I've met over the years in America as well as in Europe who don't realize that although, yes, you can heal an individual, they think we can't make much of a difference in the world. We can't make much of a difference to a war zone or a terrible disease wave or something like that. And the big message that they give us is that we can. And we don't have to wait until we're highly advanced, adepts or initiates or whatever. We can do it now. We can send out energy, such as in the 12 blessings, which I mentioned earlier, or through another form of prayer or healing, and send it out to the world. Anyone can raise their hands, say a prayer from their heart to their God, visualize white light flowing out to a region of the world which needs healing and peace and freedom, and that visualization will make a difference, and it might make a far bigger difference than we think. That's just one example of ways that we can heal. We can climb up these mountains that I've mentioned. We can cooperate with satellite number 3. We can cooperate with other aspects of the Aetherius Society, or indeed in other ways. We've never said it's the one and only way. There are many ways that people can serve. So that's their real message. This is the greatest yoga, they say, the greatest religion, the greatest path in these days.
I've always wondered if these extraterrestrials, whoever they may be living among us at this present time. What do you think?
I certainly do believe that we have had aliens living among us through history. Perhaps not as many as some people think. They are extremely unusual individuals. I do believe, as I said earlier, that beings like Jesus, Buddha, Sri Krishna, and some of those do have, I mean, the Star of Bethlehem being the most famous, UFO activity associated with them. There are undoubtedly, I believe, aliens who've lived among us in a much more secret way, who haven't revealed their identities. But again, it's divine intervention and how much of that is allowable. I mean, we've been told about 3 adepts, as they've been referred to, who have lived in our world and have helped to fight spiritual battles on our behalf. So these things have been going on behind the scenes, because although we talked earlier about hostile elements from outside of this world, there are definitely hostile elements on this planet, as well as very benign ones, such as the Ascended Masters. And there is a bit of a spiritual conflict going on this world, a lot of it unnoticed by human beings. And this battle has been entered by, I do believe, alien beings living in ordinary Earth physical bodies, on our behalf, and there are undoubtedly some alien beings working either on this level or higher levels to help us. But it's not sort of the numbers that some organizations put out. I don't think there are thousands and thousands of them.
And they may not be our neighbors.
They may certainly not be our neighbors, no. And a lot of the... We were talking earlier about alien abductions, and I've looked into that a bit when I've done paranormal broadcasts and so forth. And I do believe quite a few of those cases, often associated with people being in a deep sleep or almost like a dream state or
sure.
having what seems to be an out-of-body experience, have been with entities from this world, not from alien entities. I mean, a lot of that's been going on for, they'd have been called gremlins or ghouls or, you know, the medieval bishops talked about devils and so on. There's been a lot of that kind of thing going on, and it's from this world. There's a tendency now to sort of put everything as being alien, and it isn't all alien by any means.
I've always wondered if the Irish myths and folklore of leprechauns might have been little extraterrestrials.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I'm also a believer in devic forces, and we talk about this in the Aetherius Society. In other words, fairies, angelic creep beings, and those who are involved in waters and in the mountains, in controlling nature, if you like, and dealing with the energies of to do with weather and to do with the natural forces of the planet. And I do think leprechauns and some of the little people, as they're called in Ireland, have been those kind of devic forces, again, from this earth.
You brought up angelic. Is it possible that angelic intervention, And I do believe that occurs.
Yeah.
Might have been confused with extraterrestrial intervention and vice versa?
Certainly. I mean, angels is a word, isn't it, now, that is used to cover an enormous range of contact with higher life forms. Anything from what you might have one time called a spirit guide,
mm-hmm.
someone who's died, I've had many contacts like that myself. And when it gets to the more elevated level, though, you're talking about an angel Gabriel or things like this where there's been actual intervention, it could indeed be an extraterrestrial being. Some of the gods of ancient Greece could have been, before the stories got, you know, mishandled and distorted, could have been great and elevated beings. I mean, Catullus, the Roman poet, refers to a time when mortals mixed with the gods, and the gods came from cosmic realms, and this has been with us through the centuries in Buddhism, the lokas, the higher spheres, in the Hindu realms, and often the angelic word is used, the angelic kind of description. So one would have to look at every case, I think, but certainly some angels, or guardian angels, are more spirit guides, people who've died and are just looking over you. They're ordinary people who love you and who have died and are just caring for you.
Well, whatever is out there in the universe, Richard, it is truly, I think, marvelous. And if we are being visited, you know, it could be, again, one of the wonders of the world.
It's the most exciting thing. I mean, it's been a real privilege for me to be involved in the Aetherius Society, to be the secretary over here in Europe. And Brian Kniep is our secretary in America. And it's been a real privilege to be engaged in cooperating directly with beings from other planets. And, you know, I must say I'm at the stage now where I've had so many experiences of doing this that I can't really call it a belief anymore. It's something I've experienced and know happens and goes on. It's as real or more real than some of our ordinary experiences in life. It's a very tangible thing. I would advise people who are looking into this to keep their feet firmly on the ground, though. Don't take my word for anything I say. I mean, I invite you to investigate the things I'm saying. I don't expect you to believe it just because you've heard me say it. But you will find, though, the good news, and I agree with you, it's wonderful news, is that if you do look into this and if you do test it in your life, you will get the proof you're looking for.
Richard, when I was a boy, I'd go outside in Michigan on a cold night. Stars would be very bright and brilliant against the black sky, and I would always try to will a UFO to come by. And never happened. I've never seen one yet.
Really?
But I'm convinced that I might have been on to something. I think you can summon them that way, can't you?
Well, some people say so. I wouldn't want to be dogmatic there. Because you can't, I mean, it's up to them and not up to us, really. But what I would say, I mean, you are doing something far more important for UFOs, I would say, than seeing them, because you are enabling people such as myself to put over the case for their existence. And this is, you are cooperating, I would say, cooperating directly with them by allowing these voices to be heard. And, of course, Michigan, it's funny, I didn't know you were from Michigan.
But yeah, I was born in Detroit.
Yeah, because I had a very pleasant trip up there a few years ago. We have a wonderful branch there, actually, of people who've been involved in this for many years. So anyone from that area, we have actually groups around the USA and Canada, such as Toronto and elsewhere, do get in touch. Because you don't have to see a UFO, though, to believe in them, do you, George?
No, not at all.
I mean, it's like people, you know, I mean, most of us haven't actually met some of the, you know, pygmy or an aborigine or some of the civilizations that you know, have a proud tradition on this world, but we know they're there. We don't doubt it. It isn't essential. But also, I suppose you've been in radio studios at night a lot of your life, haven't you?
I sure
have. So you're not going to see them so easily.
I don't have time. So true. Hey, how many members in the Aetherius Society worldwide?
We don't have an exact figure, but what we say is we're not an enormous organization. We certainly have thousands around the world. We have many others, though, who are interested in us. Because our members are complete believers. So we have, I don't have the figures for America, but for example, in England, we have a mailing list of something in the region of 15 to 20,000 people who've come to us who wish to be kept informed of our activities and our beliefs. But that we don't call all of those members. The members are people who absolutely believe in the nine freedoms, the 12 blessings, and every other aspect of our work. We're very big, for example, in Nigeria and in Ghana, and we can't even sort of keep membership records in parts of those countries because of the problems of currency and communication and so on.
Did anybody in your membership ever investigate the Dogon tribe that knows all about the Sirius star system?
I can't say we've investigated. I've heard of it. I'm familiar with the name, but no, we haven't done an investigation. But from what I've heard, have you covered that on the show?
Yes, Robert Temple wrote a book on it called The Sirius Mystery.
Yeah,
and it is just a remarkable story. Absolutely
incredible.
Remarkable. Yep.
Is that tied in? That's not tied in, actually. No, it's Orion that's tied into the pyramids of Giza.
That's tied into the pyramids, right.
Yeah.
Graham Hancock's theory is that
the
belt is identical to the three major pyramids
terms
of their layout.
Yes, fascinating.
I mean, it's just this entire planet, Richard, is fascinating. The things that have happened.
It certainly is. Yes, I mean, there's really no excuse for boredom. I mean, there is so much fascinating, so many fascinating areas to look into. And in this particular field, the paranormal, you might loosely call it, you find as you go into it, at least I do, that it's really very normal. It's quite natural, and it's disbelief in some of these things, which is a bit abnormal at times, because there's so much evidence and such a tradition. What I found fascinating, actually, is that similar conclusions have been reached in different cultures, in history, in different geographical locations, who've had no connection with each other at all. For example, I'm working at the moment on a book which is related to channeling, called God's Guides and Guardian Angels.
Let's talk about that when we come back. Channeling and how that works. And, of course, we'll open up the phone lines next. Questions for our guest, Richard Lawrence, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, so it's your turn now, your phone calls with Richard Lawrence. So he's next on Coast to Coast AM. And Richard, before we take the many phone calls for you, tell me a little bit about channeling.
Well, channeling is something that I was really backing up what you were saying about all the fascinating things that are on this earth. And in researching for this book that I've been working on, I found so much common ground. For example, I went to New Zealand at one time where we have a wonderful branch in Auckland, and I met the Maoris, and I was initiated by a Maori elder, a Tohunga, into some of the rituals that they use. Very much investigated the spiritualist movement in the early 20th century in Great Britain, the Native American Indian tradition, and so on. And they all have come to the same conclusions on certain points, their approach. And so this proves their universal point. And when it comes to channeling, I believe that there has been conscious and unconscious channeling going on through history, that some of the great geniuses of history were actually channeling. On some occasions they knew it, such as William Blake, for example, but sometimes they didn't know it. And this can be from perhaps a more basic spirit guide type of channeling, which is quite an ordinary thing, although it can be quite inspirational if it's done in the right way, all the way through to the most elevated kind of channeling, such as that practiced by Dr. George King, who was a medium for beings from other worlds. But in his case, in fact, he gave a very simple principle behind mediumship many years ago, Dr. King, which I think is quite brilliant, although very obvious when you think about it, once you know it. He said that a medium can bring through an entity who's on the same level as themselves. In other words, the medium has to be able to elevate their consciousness to the level of the communicator. If they can't, no matter how psychic they might be, they wouldn't be able to bring through the most elevated type of communicator. As, for example, in Dr. King's case, he could enter samadhi, the deep yogic state of samadhi, so he could bring through these very advanced intelligences when he was channeling. And I think with that little yardstick, you can discriminate quite easily between some of the claims which are true and some of those which, sadly, are false. I mean, they can't all be true, because some of them contradict each other, and each one of us has to decide what we believe and what we don't believe and what we're not sure about. Just keep an open mind.
So true. Let's go to the phones. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, am I on the air?
You sure are.
Okay, I wanted to ask your guest if Dr. King has ever written about or talked about Godfrey Ray King, who met St. Germain on Mount Shasta in the book The Magic Presence. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, do I just reply to that, George?
Yes, you can, Richard.
I've never heard him mention that name. I think it was Geoffrey Rakin before, but he certainly has mentioned Count Saint Germain, whom he actually had contacts with himself, and who was a most remarkable, one of the great ascended masters, fascinating ascended master, one who lived not only in France but travelled quite widely, especially in Europe, for hundreds of years, and is well recorded and documented in diaries and notes of the time by everybody from Madame de Pompadour, Louis XV's mistress, to many other accounts of a very, very great master. But there have been many claimed contacts with Count Saint Germain, and certainly I don't believe they're all true. I think one has to, you know, form one's own conclusions, really.
You know, there are some who believe that Mount Shasta is a portal for UFOs, that there's some opening there, and that they fly in and out. Did he ever talk about that?
He certainly talked about Mount Shasta, and it's as a holy place, and it's certainly possible that that happened. It's certainly a connection there with ascended masters, and could well be. I'd be completely open-minded about whether that had happened. It certainly would be possible for UFOs to enter a holy mountain, such as the Himalayas, or somewhere where there's a retreat of ascended masters, like Mount Kilimanjaro, Castle Peak in Colorado now. So I'd be very open-minded, but I never personally heard him say that, but he may have done. I don't know.
Did he know, did he ever meet, did he ever talk about Edgar Cayce?
I don't think he met him. He certainly talked about him as a prophet. He didn't go into great depth, but he certainly referred to him as being a prophet, yes.
All right, let's go to our first-time caller line. You are on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Hello, this is Ken from Redding, California.
Hi, Ken.
Hi. Say, I wanted to ask Richard if he's familiar with the Guardian Alliance, the group of extraterrestrials who are here now aiding us, as depicted in the Voyager series of books by Ashiana Dean.
Hi, Ken.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I've heard of it, but I'm not qualified to really talk about it. I haven't investigated it. And there are even some movements that I have looked into a bit. And I have a general policy of not kind of publicly condemning or criticizing other organizations or other claims. I mean, especially ones that I'm not qualified to because I haven't investigated. But even those, there are some that I'm very dubious about. But I wouldn't go on the radio and sort of disparage them myself. I do believe in an open-minded approach. So I can't really help you with that, except safe to say that I just believe in keeping an open mind and judging on the merits of every case.
You know, the old saying, Richard, the proof is in the pudding.
Exactly. I mean, what you're looking for, I believe, in a contact with extraterrestrials is some real substance. I remember I came across one once. Somebody told me they'd had messages from extraterrestrials, and I said, what kind of messages are they? And they said, well, they're mainly agricultural. And I said, agricultural? Are you in farming and this medium? She said, well, no, we don't really understand the messages. They're not very useful to us. Well, there's no way, I think, that an extraterrestrial would give a message that wasn't useful. They would have a practical or a profound philosophical or scientific implication that is very useful, and in many cases, I think they would be focused on service somewhere down the line. That theme would come through, and what we can actually do about it, as opposed to just theorizing about it. And then, as I said at the top of this hour, you've got to look at the person who's claiming the contact and judge, if you like, on their merits or otherwise. Is this a person who is qualified? Are they a person who has trained in, for example, yoga practice or metaphysical development sufficiently to be able to channel extraterrestrial intelligences.
Let's go now next to our West of the Rockies line. Hi there.
Hi there. How you doing?
Yes, sir. We're well.
Hi.
Thank you.
Very well.
Good,
thank
good.
You.
I have a question about Lake Tahoe, California.
Yes.
We were camping in Emerald Bay, and we've seen a reddish glow land into the deep water part of Lake Tahoe, and I was wondering if there is any information on USOs in Lake Tahoe, California.
That's fascinating. Fascinating, because Lake Tahoe, correct me if I'm wrong, is very close to Mount Talak.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not? And I do, well, Mount Talak is one of the mountains that I mentioned earlier that we believe is a holy mountain that's been charged by extraterrestrial
wow.
intelligences. The best thing, though, because I'm not an American citizen and not very good on the geography, would be to contact, you can contact our free phone number, actually, which is 1-800-800-1354. There'll be people there, I'm sure, who've been there. But certainly it sounds fascinating, and it could be, I would say, a very, very significant place indeed to have had a UFO sighting.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Next up, East of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Steve, and I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Hi, Steve.
And I got two questions, and one of them was about 23 years ago, I heard that satellite seen a planet on the opposite side of the sun rotate just like we are, so we didn't know it was there. And then I never heard anything again ever about it, and I want to know if you guys knew anything about that. And another thing that I wanted to ask you was that I've heard on talk show today and then yours today that they did discover a planet, and is that the same one or is that something different or what? Because nobody else is talking about it.
Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Yes, it's very interesting questions you've asked there. In the Aetherius Society, we do believe that there is another planet which could be described as being inside the solar system, although Dr. King has said in a way it could be outside the solar system. And there have been comments about its orbit and it being on the other side of the sun. I'm not exactly sure what that means, though, myself, personally. But certainly another planet. Now, this one that was discovered that you referred to, we touched on it earlier in the program, I believe is 20 light years away, which in astronomical terms is very, very close, of course. So I imagine that would be described as being outside the solar system. So I can't say for sure whether I would say it probably isn't. I think it's orbiting a red dwarf, I believe. But certainly there is another planet. We don't know exactly where it is. Things are being discovered all the time. It could be in some kind of elliptical orbit. I don't really know. But there's another planet we believe that will be inhabited by people from this world who don't choose to go into the New Age I refer to, who don't make the changes and continue their evolution in another way. And that I can't give you anything more precise than that, I'm afraid, except that it does exist. Whether it's been discovered, there's been so much talk about a planet X in this solar system, so many theories.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's yet to be fully revealed, I really think.
Where could I find more information about this planet?
Well, you can certainly, the purpose of this planet and so forth, you'll find through the Aetherius Society. In terms of the details, do you mean more information about the one that was discovered yesterday?
Yeah, that one and the other one, yeah.
Well, that one, I suppose, would be through a news agency. It was a European group of astronomers, and they had a telescope, I think, in Chile, which identified. I'm sure through the web
it's 20 light years away. You can just Google search planet or go to space.com. Steve, you'll get a lot of information on it there.
In the book that George mentioned, Contacts with the Gods from Space, which I was privileged to co-author with Dr. King, we do explain thoroughly the reasons for this new planet, why some human beings will go there to continue their evolution, what will happen in the New Age, if you like, the whole philosophical aspect and what's going to happen to the future of the human race is fully explained in that book, but not the astronomical details of where the planet is, because I don't think that's fully known yet.
Okay, let's go to our first-time caller line. Hello there. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hello, I'm Elaine from Pennsylvania. And I just have to ask your caller if he's familiar with a seer from Bayside, New York, Veronica Lukin. She had been receiving messages from the Virgin Mary. And in one of the messages, she addressed the phenomenon of UFOs. And the Virgin Mary stated that they are transports from hell. Have you ever heard anything about that?
Hi, Elaine. I haven't. But there are so many claims out there. And, you know, this comes back to what we were talking about with channeling. It's an area where you need to be a real expert, to be honest. You need to be very, very careful, very discriminating. I've done some basic channeling myself, nothing elevated such as, I mean, light years away from, say, what Dr. King has done. But I am familiar with the fact that one can easily make mistakes. One can get a contact with someone. One thinks it's a great being. It may not be a great being. Obviously, I don't believe UFOs are transports from hell. So that, for me, that would be quite a discriminating factor in looking at this particular claimed contact. As I said earlier, I don't like to go out and deride people's claims at all. But there are a whole range of people. There are people nowadays, and I'm sure it must be true in the States as well as Europe, who are out there teaching people to channel, who are just saying, you can contact whichever being you like. Do you want to contact the angel Gabriel? Do you want to contact Count Saint Germain? You name it, we'll teach you to do it in a three-hour seminar, something like that. And it's highly irresponsible. It can be very dangerous, actually, to be doing that. One needs to be very grounded and very discriminating. And I don't want to sound like a know-it-all, because I have very, very much to learn myself. But I just think one has to be careful with some of the claims that are being made. Even though the people making them, by and large, I'm sure believe it themselves, doesn't make it true. Just examine the content. Look at the message. Is it a spiritual message? Like in the Aetherius Society, I would invite you to do the same. I wouldn't say take my word for it. Look at the messages. You can get CDs with messages on them. We have one, for example, Meditation for This Age. A wonderful message, and I know there's some offers up on our website at the moment, so people can familiarize themselves with these things and then form your own conclusions. But I'd be very careful of someone who just says, well, I was doing some psychic work and then I was suddenly contacted by such and such a great being. They'd have to be someone of quite significant caliber to channel the Virgin Mary, for example.
How important has the work of Dr. George King been on your life, Richard?
Absolutely transforming, completely liberating. In two ways, really. One, and the most important one, I suppose, is showing me what an ordinary person such as myself can do, what a difference an ordinary person can make in the whole world. You know, because one does feel so helpless. And the most stressful feeling anyone can have, according to research, is this feeling of helplessness. And, you know, when you see the wars and the pointless suffering and the all the things that are the dangers that threaten us from the Middle East and elsewhere, you can feel very helpless, but it's completely liberating to be given a way of actually making a difference. And anybody can do that through things like the 12 blessings. So that's the first thing. And the second thing, of course, is the enlightenment that I received, thanks to Dr. King, not that I'm enlightened, but the enlightening teachings that I received, which have just been transforming in my own personal development.
Let's go to our wild card call before the break. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. My name is Linda. I'm calling from Southern Illinois. And a couple of things. First of all, I'm sitting here looking at the exact symbol I've got done in stained glass, which I believe is the Ohm symbol that your society uses. Mm-hmm. But my basic question is this. I also work with radionics. Yeah. I have a Copen Laboratory PR2. There is a dial on there, and I've never been able to get any information really from Copen about it. I also have multiple broadcasters. And they just say that these higher, I believe it's an F1, I haven't used it for 6 years to tell you the truth, is for higher spiritual frequencies. Mm-hmm. Is this what we're talking about?
Yes, I don't know the manufacturer you mentioned, but the question is, was it Linda?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Linda. The question, Linda, would be, when you did use it 6 years ago, did it have an effect? Did you feel a difference in your life when you used it?
As far as radionics and what I broadcast was for healing, I did not play with the higher frequencies, and it was states in the book, it's used for higher spiritual frequencies. It was something new to this machine, and I did get the machines, of course, from England. They're not made in the United States.
I see. Well, it would all be, really, to answer your question, about the source, because apparatus, while being a marvelous thing and essential to certain kinds of work, is only a channel, really, for the energies that come from a source. So these higher frequency energies you're referring to would have to be radiated from somewhere. The machine could only transmit them. And so that would really be the acid test. I wouldn't be frightened of them or wary of them, but I would have thought that the source would have to be some elevated spiritual source. It wouldn't just be generated purely by the machine.
Stay with us. We'll be back with final phone calls for Richard Lawrence in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with our dear friend, Richard Lawrence, and the rest of your phone calls. Richard, this night has flown by, my friend.
I can't thank you enough for inviting me back, George. It's been a real pleasure for me and a real privilege to talk to the people of America and around the world.
Do you get to Los Angeles very often?
I do from time to time, actually. I've certainly spent a lot of my time there over the years. But if I do, I'd love to meet you, George.
Yeah, do me a favor. Let me know. Give me a little head start. And when I know you're going to be there, I'll make sure I'm there. You know, I'm in L.A. quite a bit, and I go between that and St. Louis. But definitely, I'd like to meet you and have that tour of the Aetherius Society.
Yeah, and even without me, I'm sure they'd make you very, very welcome in Hollywood. But I'd love to meet you. And likewise, if you're ever in town, over in London or in the U.K., please let me know.
I'd love to do that. I may sneak my cell phone camera into the Aetherius Society and try
to
get pictures.
You'll be our guest. We would love to welcome you.
Let's go to the phones this last half hour. Wildcard Line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Tampa Mark here.
Mark,
good evening,
go for
gentlemen.
It.
Richard.
Good evening.
Did I hear you say correctly that one of the two previous civilizations, a gold chain was carbon dated to 100,000 years, something like that?
Well, I was referring to some of the archaeological findings. Is it Mark?
Yes, sir.
Oh, Mark, hi. Yeah, some of the archaeological findings that people have come up with, and one was a gold chain. I haven't got the locations in front of me. I've got quite a bit of... There's a lot of research, and I think George has covered this on the station before, but people have found this particular gold chain was clearly crafted and it's been carbon dated at being over 1 million years old. So, indicating that there are previous civilizations.
Okay, well, that being the case, I was wondering how you carbon date gold, because gold is a metal. Carbon, of course, is an entirely different element.
I'm no expert on this. I'd have to get my sources. That the substance that it came out of, which I think was coal,
right.
was carbon dated.
Okay, not the gold. You're right. You can't carbon date gold, but
no,
you can the coal.
Corrected me there, but it was where it was found, and it hadn't been moved, and so on.
Okay, so the substance.
But I can put you in touch if you want the details. I mean, I can give you more on that through. Anyone can contact me if they have questions through my website, and I'll give you proper research on it.
Hey, you got it. I can find you. I'll look it up. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right, next up, East of the Rockies, your turn. You're on with Richard Lawrence on Coast to Coast.
Hi, I'm Julianne, living
in
Colorado Springs.
Hi.
And I'm 23, calling about, I just want to know if you've ever heard of star children or indigo children.
I've heard about them, yes. What did you want to say about
them? I want to know if you, know what they are. Well, I talked to clairvoyant, a couple of them, and they were telling me that I was one, and I just want to know exactly what that is.
You know, I so many people use these phrases in different ways, and I haven't made a study of it, and as I said earlier, I don't make a point in commenting on other claims, But my broad belief is they are supposed to be a very advanced children. I think probably some people would say they're not even of this world. Is that what you've been led to believe?
Kind of. I've actually also listened in before on one of George Noy's shows about...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I tuned in at the moment it was being mentioned, and, you know, I just thought maybe you guys would have something to say.
Yeah.
Also, the same... they both have told me interesting things about UFOs and extraterrestrial beings. One was saying that there's this, like, energy in Hawaii or around the Pacific Ocean that the UFOs to, like, protect, you know, and that she was also saying that there would be some bad aliens, I don't want to say bad aliens, but that they are here protecting the world and protecting the, us humans against, you know, anything bad or negative.
Well, yes, absolutely would agree on that. And I think in terms of yourself, obviously, you know, you're 23. Like me, when I was a student at university and so on, I was really in pursuit of the truth. And I think that's a hallmark of someone who's perhaps... had some experiences in past lives, is how I would put it. Someone who really wants to find the truth and is willing to accept the truth, regardless of convention and how different it is from what the dogmas were taught, and a real broad-minded person who will look into the truth is a hallmark of someone who's had some experience in past lives. I wouldn't necessarily say that, though, that would make them from another planet or anything like that at all. But certainly, you're obviously on a quest, and this person who told you about the benign intelligences protecting us from hostile ones, I would completely agree with, because if we weren't protected, you know, it wouldn't be some sort of George Bush going up in an airplane to defend us, as per the film Independence Day or something. We just simply wouldn't stand a chance, and we've been incredibly protected and still are being protected by mainly... the beings from within this solar system who live on higher levels or spheres or frequencies, if you like, of existence.
Richard, if you could have one question answered on just about anything that you've desired here, one question, what would that question be?
Gosh, that's an amazing question. You know, I've had so many of my questions answered. Obviously, I think the big thing that we're all trying to do in this world, for ourselves personally, if we're talking about for ourselves personally, is to overcome the need of rebirth, if you like. And this is one of the great mysteries of all Eastern traditions, to try and find a thing called ascension, which was demonstrated by Jesus. It was a demonstration of something which others had also demonstrated in a less famous way through his resurrection. So I suppose it would be, for me personally, a key to attaining that as quickly as possible. But having said that, I have been given something more important, which is the path in these days of service to others, and that's the best and most effective way to go. So I think it would be, I think that my biggest dream really would be to be given a way to enter into direct cooperation and come into the personal presence of the ascended masters, those who have overcome the cycle of rebirth.
I would ask, what was the universe prior to the Big Bang? Truly, what was it?
Right.
And I wonder if I'd ever get that answer. I'm not sure if physicists can ever give me that answer.
No, you know, there is this, because the Big Bang theory is very close to the Hindu concept of the outbreathing and the inbreathing, you know, that God breathed out and creation manifested and breathed in and we return. And there's this idea of the expansion of the universe and then the, you know, retraction of the universe. But they always said, though, that the big question as to why did God do this cannot be fully answered, or even if the answer was given, it wouldn't be understood. Because the whole purpose of life is to gain experience, master experience, and then return back to the source from which we came, which is, as you say, prior to the Big Big Bang, which they would say was the divine source. But as to why, that question, they said, can only be answered really fully by doing it. You know, the answer will dawn, or when one's in a far more enlightened stage than we are on this human race. And I think that's the problem with some of these questions. It's all down, one could give an answer or get an answer, but what would it mean to us if we didn't have sufficient enlightenment to understand it?
Well said. First time caller, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask Richard if he was familiar with any of the Virgin Mary apparitions throughout history, and right now, currently, the one in Medjugorje, Bosnia.
I actually have heard of that. I you know, and I'm aware there have been numerous visions of the Virgin Mary, particularly, for example, I remember we were engaged at one time. There was an earthquake in New Mexico. In Mexico, and we sent energy there, and many had visions of the Virgin Mary when houses were falling down around them and they weren't killed and so on. I do believe that's a very interesting question, that visions, spiritual visions, are very much connected with it, with your own belief system. Mm-hmm. So people who are perhaps from the Catholic faith would be more inclined to have visions of the Virgin Mary, as one would expect. Somebody from perhaps a more Hindu faith or a yogic Tibetan faith or something like that might see a Dakini or some other kind of manifestations connected with that tradition, because it's in their group soul, it's in their group consciousness. And I do believe, by the way, sorry, I'm not trying to get away from your question, that there are those who've had contacts with what they believe to be even Jesus, which may actually not be Jesus. It might just be a higher guide guiding them, but they perceive it that way. But I think some of the phenomena around the Virgin Mary has to do with thought forms, which, you know, thoughts are things. And if people are thinking about visualizing and praying to the Virgin Mary enough in a particular region, that can manifest as a vision. And that may have happened even in somewhere like the Bosnia one you talked about.
Yeah, right now there's millions of people from various faiths just going to this site, and they just receive physical and spiritual healing. And it's immense. It's just really miraculous, and I just wanted to know if you knew about it.
It's fascinating. I mean, it just shows the wonder. I remember not long ago, there was some things associated with the Hindu god of Ganesha. You may remember, and there were these statues. It's a god with an elephant trunk, and milk was coming out of it, physical milk. And, you know, the more, actually, people think about it en masse, you say there are millions, the more it's liable to manifest, because that thought must manifest sooner or later.
Great. Let's go to East of the Rockies. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello. How are you?
We are
very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. This is Terry, and I live in Texas.
Hi.
And I was wanting to know, I have spent most of my life trying to help people.
Wonderful.
You know, I've been in nursing. I've spent time taking care of medically fragile children and, you know, just different things like that. And taking care of family. But I have found that the more you try and do things for people, the nastier they get towards you. And
that's interesting.
And I have found that what I was wanting to know is, you know, you were stating that the way to enlightenment and to be in touch with these beings is through helping people, you know, but it makes it very difficult to help people when the more you try, the meaner and the nastier they get towards you.
It's a very interesting question, Terry, and, I'm sorry you've had that experience. I don't think that's always the case. But, you know, I found one thing, as I've mentioned, I'm very interested in is karma, and I wanted a book called The Little Book of Karma. And one thing I found from doing some radio broadcasts in the UK, I was doing a four-hour one in a northern city called Manchester, and there was somebody listening to that, unbeknown to me, who decided to take their own life. They had the pills on the shelf, and they decided to switch the radio on one last time. And we were the interviewer and myself were discussing karma, and the fact that sometimes sympathy is not the most valuable thing to give a person. Sometimes What they need to do is to see what benefit they can get from life's lessons and what life is trying to teach them, no matter how hard. See some good purpose in what they're going through, and then they can get through anything. And this woman listening said that she saw a ray of light come into her room. She threw the pills away. She decided to live. Now, I mention that because sometimes one can, you know, give people too much. You know, they need not so much sympathy. They need to learn something. You can go so far in helping people. Sometimes you can help them more by, you know, enabling them to stand on their own two feet. It's a very difficult balance. But what I can assure you, though, Terry, that is that what goes around does come around. And even though it may not appear to sometimes in the short term, if you do good for others and genuinely do good for others and you really help them without letting them lean upon you, then, you know, that will help you in the long run. And it will give you a more positive karma. So, indeed, you can do more for others. And that's the motive. The motive isn't to get good karma. The motive has got to be to help others to get on in life and improve their lot. And if they're ungrateful, which people can be, well, I'm very sorry that can happen too.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're up. Thanks for holding.
Yeah, hi. I was noticing that he was speaking of Dr. King receiving messages and instructions from friendly entities. And he had also spoken of the hostiles. A lot of it sounded really similar to what Heidi Hollis talks about. And I was wondering if he was familiar with her and if he happens to think that she's one of those individuals also.
I have to apologize here because, again, I don't know the person you're referring to. I know there's a lot of claims out there. And most of the ones I come across, of course, being in Europe, are over there. But I know I'm very open-minded, and where there's common ground between different claimants, well, let's all, you know, join together on that common ground. And, you know, even if we don't agree on every detail, there's some of the broad principles we agree on, and it's good to hear. It's very good to hear that other people are putting out a similar message.
Let's get one last question in. First-time caller line. Go ahead, please.
Hey, guys. Thanks, George. Hey, Richard. I'm driving from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, uh-huh. And you guys are talking about the different mountains, and then you mentioned Mount Baldy, and I look up, and there's an exit from Mount Baldy. So it was really weird. So I drove
up
there.
Was it a sign that you saw, a physical sign?
Yeah.
What's that?
Was it a physical sign that you saw?
Yeah. It's actually the turnoff to go to Mount Baldy.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Synchronicity, because I mentioned a story that happened to me years ago at the beginning of the program, is a very interesting thing. And, you know, I don't believe anything happens by chance, so maybe it wasn't just a physical sign. Maybe it was a bit more than that for you.
Well, I actually went up there. I just got down off the mountain, and I want to thank you, man, because I was
really?
I didn't really know where to go, and I didn't really, you know, but I got up there, and I got out of my car, and I sat on the mountain for a little bit and meditated. Oh.
Did you feel any energy out there, Kevin?
Well, yeah, I kind of did. I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, I was like, got into the meditation, like, you know, the different levels, and all of a sudden, a bunch of coyotes started to howl, which is, I don't know, I just took that as a sign, you know, it was like, these dogs were howling at me, and I said,
well, you're certainly a man of action.
What's that?
You're certainly a man of action, and I admire that, Kevin. You know, you've tested it out straight away. I can't ask for more than that. Therefore, if everybody listening sort of looks into what I've said and actually tries it out in their life, like you've done tonight, then as far as I'm concerned, that's absolutely marvelous.
Richard, my friend, we're out of time. I want to thank you for spending really a very enlightening night with us tonight.
Well, George, it's been a real pleasure for me, and I do love chatting to you, and thank you for inviting me again.
Absolutely. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smith, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.